Hello and welcome back to Cycling Mo, your cycling informant. Today it's the second in my series, The Day I. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Connor Swift for The Day I Became British Champion, which is a fairly monumental moment in your life. Connor, how are you?
Yeah, all good here, thank you.
Okay, let's get straight to it. We're looking purely at the British Championships. The first thing I want to know is, when did you start kind of focusing on that race?
I think it's kind of hard because obviously we're in the UK, we're racing every weekend and, you know, you're just taking every race as it comes, and as a team sort of thing, you might be given the role of, you know, leading the race one week and then the next you might be working for someone else. But obviously the Nationals, it's fair play to everyone and you make the most of it as you can. And I'd probably say a couple of weeks prior to the Nationals, I was, you know, it starts to play on everyone's minds. And then obviously the week of the Nationals, you're starting to realise that, you've got a big race coming up. So, you know, a couple of weeks out or a week or so out, I was, setting my eyes on it.
And did the team do a recon of the course?
No, because obviously it was on the Beaumont course, and that's something that we race every year. So all the lads were pretty familiar with the course, and, you know, we all knew what to expect. We did a bit of a recce, you know, the day before, just to refresh in our minds what the course is actually like. But everyone pretty much knew.
What was your form like heading into the race?
Yeah, it was good. I think a big thing that I did do was the Tour Series takes away quite a bit of your base that from all the UK lads, because you have the first start of the season, you're going well, and then you go into the Tour Series and all you're doing is racing like an hour or so, recovering, racing another hour. So your form tends to drop, even though you're doing quite high intensity efforts. So I just made sure while I was doing the Tour Series period that I was getting in, you know, 2 to 3 hours potentially in the morning of a round. So I kept that quantity of training there. And that kind of, looking back at my training peaks now, you kind of see my form doesn't necessarily drop as it did in 2017. So I came out of the Tour Series form relatively good. Next couple of races, they went well, and then I was going pretty well for around Nationals time.
You finished 10th in the TT a couple of days beforehand. Was that purely a kind of hit out to get the legs going, or?
Yeah, I wanted to do better, to be honest. I was a bit disappointed with that result. I mean, it was a hot day, and I can remember just as soon as I set off in the TT, the legs weren't really feeling it, and it was a real struggle all the way around. So I kind of came out of that, you know, a little bit disappointed, because I was quite geared up for that and wanting to, you know, do better. But I mean, looking back, I'm definitely going to want to do the TT again this season. So I do think it's a good, you know, 50 minutes to an hour, 3 days before the event. And especially if you're doing, you know, time trials in preparation for that as well. Yeah, I think it's definitely good to do before the actual race.
Okay, so getting towards the race day, team meeting, was that the night before or was it the morning of the race?
Yeah, we had that the night before. All the lads crammed into a little hotel room.
Now, you'd mentioned there, you know, team, you're riding for Madison Genesis, but how much freedom was given to each rider considering it was Nationals?
I think, freedom we were given to everyone. Obviously, we wanted riders in the move. We wanted numbers in the move, so we knew a move normally goes in the Nationals, and if you're up there, then the race comes to you. So yeah, there was three of us in that actual breakaway. So other riders behind, once that had gone out, then they could have, you know, sat on moves, jump across, but the gap went out quite fast. So there was not necessarily anyone, you know, going into there leading the race. It was just everyone get the most out of it that they can.
You mentioned about the break going and how it quite often works that way in the British Nationals. What was the start of the race like, you know, before TV coverage gets switched on? How crazy was the first kind of 10-20k?
Yeah, it's pretty mad. It's pretty panicky. Yeah, everyone, you're just, you know, firing up the road, trying to get away. You do like some big, massive efforts, think you get away, and then next minute you're back in the swarm of the bunch. So it is pretty chaotic, but a break of about 8 or 10 went. And then I can remember the move I went across with, that was like another 8 guys. And then another 8 guys came across later on. So it was actually like a bit of a formation of, you know, three groups joining together to make one big breakaway.
At what point in the race did you realise, yeah, this is, the brake's gone, I'm in the brake?
Yeah, I think it's when that other eight guys came across and you looked around, those 22 guys, you know, you're all rolling through, you're all going at a decent pace, and then at that moment you're thinking, yeah, there's got to be a serious chase behind to pull this back, because realistically behind you've got to have the same number of guys committing the same amount behind, which ain't going to happen when they've got, you know, 100 guys sat on. So I think it was the point when there was like 20, 22 of us, you know, away, and we're all rolling through pretty solidly.
How much energy did you use up making the move?
Yeah, I can remember it was pretty tough getting across. I think I was in the group with Dole, and he did some serious big turns, and especially on that course, the roads are real, you know, grippy and quite rough. So yeah, I went pretty hard to get across, that's for sure.
Now, when you've realised, okay, the brake's established, we're working well here, you look around, you see you've got a couple of teammates, I think you had George Pym and Matt Holmes, that made you feel a bit better, the fact you've got a little bit of help there?
Yeah, it's nice, you know, you can speak to them guys, see how they're feeling, and then obviously we've got Colin behind, got the team car behind, and go back to that, you know, you've got bottles and things like that, and get food off of one another, so yeah, it was good to have teammates there.
Now, your cousin Ben Swift, he also made the move. Now, was there any kind of chat pre-race about going in the move?
Not so much chatting, but I can remember at the start, I think it went him, and then I rolled through over the top of him, and he just told me to, you know, ease off it quite early on. You know, I was maybe a little bit too keen, got a bit too giddy, so yeah, he told me to back off a little bit early on in the race, I can remember. And then, yeah, throughout the race, you know, you just have a little bit of a chit-chat to one another, but nothing I can really remember or anything exciting.
So the next phase of the race, so you've made the break, big effort to get across, it's formed, I think it was about 18 riders, something like that, big move, and then you know it's not coming back, you know, the car's in place. How do you change your tactics at that point? You know, how much conversation was there with the teammates, with the team car?
Yeah, it was with the teammates, you know, coming into the final stages, it was just asking each other how each other was. I can remember Matt Holmes, he wasn't feeling that great because that was basically his first big race back after having problems with injury. So he told me straight away that he wasn't feeling fantastic. George was feeling okay. And then I relayed back to them that I was feeling good. Told Colin the same thing. So he was just keeping us motivated, really, and just, you know, letting us know that yeah, we're in for a shout for a good result.
You know, you're riding for a long time. At what point do you think, right, I need to switch on here? We're kind of moving into the end phase of the race. Moves could go, you know, roughly how long to go did that happen?
Yeah, I think it was the last time up the Ryles, or the second to the last time. I was getting a bit wary and thinking things were going to kick off quite a bit more than they actually did. Especially the last time up, I think it was Dole that hit out, and nothing really formed from that. And then we've only got the small lap to go, which is, I think off the top of my head, it's about 18-20k. And it was just a case of just being attentive on there. And, you know, you've got three World Tour, or, you know, we got a couple of World Tour guys and a couple of Pro Conti guys, and I think everyone was watching them. If you see them going a little bit of a move, you follow.
Right, okay, so with about 20k to go, I think there was a kind of mini break with yourself in it, but I think it was Dool who forced it back on.
Yeah.
Was that kind of disappointing? Did you think, yeah, I'm getting away here?
Yeah, I can remember I was with, I think it was Christy and Blythe. Ben and Dool had both missed out on it. A couple of the Wiggins lads, and I was kind of really pushing that, to be fair, and I was quite confused why Christian, you know, wasn't, you know, forcing that for Blythe as well. But I just do think it was that point in the race where everyone was genuinely a bit tired and things like that. So I can remember that, and I did think that was going to potentially go, especially with Blythe having his teammate there. And then that came back, and then, yeah, it was just a case of it all resetting, basically.
Now, we often hear about how important it is to fuel, to eat, to drink. Was that something you were aware of throughout the race?
Yeah, I definitely, looking back, nailed that on the head, really. Yeah, I was getting bottles pretty much every lap, keeping myself hydrated, eating all the time, popping gels, you know, like every half an hour sort of thing. And then one small lap to go. I do like to have a bottle of with Coke and water, just class that as a bit of rocket fuel for the last stage of the race. And yeah, it definitely paid off this time around.
Now, when it came back together, you mentioned some of the names there, you know, Owen Dules, Skyrider, Adam Blythesayre, who's obviously a sprinter. You know, what's going through your head? What sort of thing are you kind of, are you thinking about the end game? Are you thinking about the last 10K? You know, what's the plan at that point inside that last 20K?
Yeah, I mean, as the race went on, I grew confidence. I was thinking, yeah, him for a shout with a top 10 here. You can get a top 5 here. And then I was thinking, could potentially podium, because if it did come down to a sprint, then I'd have gone long. I wouldn't have waited for anyone else, you know, to kick things off first. So I'd have gone for quite a long sprint. Yeah, I'd have wanted to get the jump on other people. So I was backing myself, to be fair, in the race. Obviously, I wasn't thinking I was going to win from the sprint sort of thing, but I was pretty confident. And I can remember it was a point in the race when, I think it was when I was with Blythe and Christian, and I was trying to push that little group away. There was Gabs there or someone, and someone just told me to ease off a little. And I knew then that, you know, they were tired. So it was, that spurred me on a little bit more as well.
Now, I think it was 12K to go. You know, there'd been a number of kind of moves and attacks. It kind of, the race went through a fairly chaotic period, if I remember rightly. And then you go and you get the gap and you get, what was it? It was about 10, 12 seconds. Was it about 10 seconds?
Yeah.
Now, did you expect to go and nobody to follow? Because normally with 12K to go, you would hope somebody might come with me, we'll share the work. So when you got that initial gap and you realise nobody's coming, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I was expecting someone to be with me, or, you know, a bit of a two up. But yeah, that didn't happen, and it was just a case of I told myself, don't look back. And I've watched the footage back, and I think I looked back once with, I don't know, 10K to go. Well, no, sorry, 8K to go, and then I looked back about 10 times 300 metres to go. But that was one thing I just kept on telling myself, don't look back, and just get as aero as possible, you know, get tucked. And then another thing was, once I'd done, I don't know, 2-3K just off of adrenaline, I then settled down to riding off of power. And yeah, that was just the key thing, don't look back.
You remember, what power were you riding?
I was trying to maintain around 400 watts. Just, I thought, if I can, it's what I can do in training. So I was like, I'm not going to set myself to do any higher or any lower. I know I can do this in training. So I just said, I'm setting myself that I'll do that for as long as I can. And I know if anyone does have to come across, they've got to be doing, you know, 500 plus basically to, you know, be making ground up on me.
The group behind you then, we start to see a little bit of kind of arguing. Blythe's there, he's going to win the sprint. Dool's there, everybody wants him to work. They keep attacking each other, you're still away. And then the gap drops. I think the gap dropped to about 5 seconds with 5K to go. You know, you mentioned there you weren't really wanting to look around, but were you aware that they were, you know, they were getting close?
Yeah, I when I glanced at 8K, I thought I did. I knew there was a group behind me. When I have watched the footage back and I see when I took one of those corners, how close they actually were, that it's quite scary watching it back. And yeah, that's just another thing why I'm quite happy that I, you know, just kept it in my head. Don't look back. Don't take a sneak peek. So, but yeah, at the time I didn't actually realise it had actually came that close of 5 seconds.
Now the gap seemed to go out a little bit, and then Blythe made a big move at 3K to go, and he immediately gained what I was watching on TV. He immediately gained quite a large amount of ground on you, and it looked like, okay, here comes the Pro Conti rider. He's going to ride across. This is it. Did you know Blythe was coming solo? Did you manage a little look?
Didn't have a clue Bligh was coming across at all. So, yeah, that would have been a shock seeing him just pop up out of nowhere.
So then he makes the gap and he's getting close to you, and then it's 2K, about 1.5K, and then all of a sudden the people watching realise he's not getting across, the gap's going out. You know, when did you start to think, I'm winning this?
Yeah, it was within that last, you know, 1K to go. I was growing confidence and visualising myself, you know, celebrating winning. And then, as you can see, watching the footage back, that last 300 metres, I look over my shoulders about 20 times. Just can't believe it. And then, it happens. And, yeah, just full of emotion.
I mean, it's probably a daft question. It's probably one you've been asked loads. What goes through the mind? You know, in that moment, you're riding up to the line. You know you're going to be crowned British champion. You know, what's in the head?
I think it's just an overwhelming amount of joy. Yeah, it's just a massive relief, and you're just trying to soak up as much as you can, you know, taking all the cheers from the crowds and everything like that. It was pretty surreal, and just celebrating with a big roar.
Now, you get over the line. That's usually when the cameras stop. What's that immediate kind of aftermath like? That kind of 5-10 minutes when obviously your team are there to congratulate you. I don't know if you had family at the race. You know, what was that like straight after the race?
Yeah, I see my Swanee and then just parked, gave him my bike, sat down, and I burst into tears, to be honest with you. Just full of emotion, and then came round and had my family come up to me, girlfriend, she came running over, gave me a hug, my mum, dad, got all the teammates, DS, just everyone, you know, around you is just celebrating you, patting you on the back, and you just, they're just like reminiscing with you, sort of thing.
Now, presentation, do you remember it?
Yeah, a little bit.
You managed to open the champagne well?
Yeah, the spray went all right. Me, Dool and Blythe, before we went on the podium, we said to each other, we're not going to, you know, spray each other, sort of thing. So, it went good.
That night, did you afford yourself some celebrations?
No, not really, because it took us about 2 hours to get... Oh, straight after the podium, I had to go for doping control. That took quite a while. And then, following from that, it was about two and a half hours back home in the car, and then got home, and you know, my phone was going nuts, just trying to, I just wanted my phone back to normal basically and get rid of all the notifications. So I spent a solid little bit of time getting through quite a lot of notifications, and then we ordered a pizza, and yeah, that was about it. Went to bed.
Now, did you sleep in the jersey?
The girlfriend wanted to sleep in the jersey, I can remember. But no, didn't sleep in it.
Then the next few days, obviously, you wake up the next morning, you maybe have to wonder, was I dreaming? No, I'm British champion. So what were the next few days like? I could imagine the amount of media work you would have to do compared to normal was insane.
Yeah, my phone was still going pretty crazy and, you know, replying to a lot of people. I went out for a calf ride the next day, rode in the actual jersey that I got on the presentation. I had a phone call from the team. You know, they was asking me if I wanted a bike, if I wanted white shorts. I was like, no, I'll go for a black. But it was pretty bonkers and, pretty crazy, to be fair.
Now, did anything change immediately, you know, or you seem quite a grounded guy, you know, was it just kind of business as usual?
I'd say so. You know, I went out on the chain gang and all the locals, they was like, put the Strava's name as chain gang, you know, we're the British national champ, but, you know, everyone sort of just, after those first few days after the nationals, everyone just gets back into the normal routine, and I wouldn't say it's changed me as a person or anything like that. It's definitely raised my profile as a rider, and then it opened up the opportunities that I had in later on in the season.
Yeah, what were those opportunities like? Because obviously you've gone to Dimension Data to ride as a stagiaire, you've ridden in some big races, you also go to the World Championships, which, you know, that must have been huge.
Yeah, definitely. Stagiaire for Dimension Data, and then Roger was telling me about all the chaos that they had as, you know, getting actual national jerseys for a stagiaire guy. He says that was a lot of talk in the team and stuff like that. So, no, that was definitely fantastic racing for them and really loved that. And then following on from that, being told that, oh, I'm getting put on the long list for the World Champs. Oh, I'm actually selected for the World Champs. And yeah, that was pretty crazy. It's the first time I've ever, you know, been acknowledged by BC or been contacted by them to ride for GB. So that was a pretty pretty big moment, and I've definitely got my, you know, foot in the door now for being able to represent them moving on into the future. So if you just told me all of that in the beginning of the season, I wouldn't quite believe you, maybe.
And it was almost a Northern England GB team. Looking back, it was most of the riders were all kind of your way or higher.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. James Knox, Hugh Carthy, all them boys. Yeah, it was slightly northern based team. It was.
Now you've mentioned that out in training, you've got the jersey on. What's that like? You must get a few peeps of the horn and a few waves off people now compared to what you used to get. Is that quite a nice feeling when you're out training?
Yeah, I can remember when I first got the actual printed Madison Genesis jersey. I went out with a ride with that, and you know, you look down at the sleeve, and I said to the lads when I got back, it felt like I was riding in some Skyriders, you know, national champs jersey sort of thing. So didn't quite believe it, but now pulling it on, going training and stuff, yeah, there's a bit of recognition there, and you notice it more in races, I'd say. You know, you get people come up to you in races and just congratulate you and say nice jersey, etc. So that's all pretty cool.
And how does that feel? You know, you've had a number of months as a British champion. You know, that feeling that every day you wake up, you go training, you put your national jersey on. You know, does it get tired? Is it still quite a nice moment every day when you get to do that?
Yeah, I mean, during these winter months, I haven't actually had a long-sleeved national champ jersey. So I've just recently been in Gran Canaria and I've been back in the national champs kit. So it's been nice to go back out to Gran Canaria and, you know, be actually back in the champs kit. And I know that I'm getting some, you know, winter kit made up from Madison in the next couple of months.
Now, you mentioned it earlier. At the start of last season, at the start of 2018, if somebody had tapped you on the shoulder and said, you're going to be British champion, what would you have said?
Probably really wouldn't have believed them, you know. It's pretty, call them a bit mental.
Okay, Connor, it's been a nice good look back at your special day for lots of people watching on. It was a real special day too, the day you became British champion. Thank you very much for giving up your time to do this. If you've enjoyed the podcast, remember to rate, review and subscribe. Connor, thank you very much.
Thank you. Accumulate pace, first race a blade for the game. We move from weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might lead your mind strain. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the prop, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves saw, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fallatio from lazy do fall to Paul Kane. But brought a broad brain with it all game. You snow change, she do like a sonic grand, probably 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always. Yeah.